Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on insurance is a crime right after this. Well, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of our two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. Now, this school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, a citation, or a complaint. Now, rule number one is don't say anything. Keep your mouth shut, and then shut up. Now, if you can learn rule one, you can win about 90% of your legal cases. And that's because all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. Now, your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. So don't give the prosecution the victory. At least make them work for it. Now, listen to what the courts have had to say about keeping your mouth shut in the face of police interrogation, and indeed, in some cases, police intimidation. One judge put it this way. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? And he said that in U.S. versus Dickerson. A second judge said this. He said, you can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. And that comes from Belknap versus United States. And a third judge put it this way. He said, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and the farsighted. They said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Remember, best of all, it's free. Now, our school, courtroom strategy and procedure, is not free, and it is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. It's an easy way to do it. Just go to georgegordon.org, click on the email, and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about this thing of insurance. Insurance here in the United States is a given. And we are wedded. We believe in insurance. And we buy insurance for just about everything. I mean, we have fire insurance and homeowners insurance and auto insurance and health insurance. In fact, our government now is in the process, at least they're talking to us about, giving us national health care insurance. In one state, at least, Massachusetts, has made, made health care insurance in the state of Massachusetts compulsory. I think they're the first ones to do that. Now, they've done that here in the United States with auto insurance. In almost every state now, auto insurance is compulsory. And if you don't buy auto insurance, they won't register your car. And if they catch you driving without insurance, you've got to have a card, you know, when the police stop you. They want to check your papers. So just like the Nazis did in World War II, we have the same thing going on here. You know, we call this America the land of the free and the home of the brave. We got the same police state that they've had, you know, around the world, you know, for thousands of years. But we have a different label for it. We call it freedom over here. Well, anyway, they require that you have this insurance card so you can show that you carry insurance. Now, let's talk about this for a second, because insurance, in reality, when you're compelled to buy it, whether you want it or not, is an extortion racket. I mean, it's just your free choice. Freedom of choice is a marketplace decision. But when you're threatened with some kind of a punitive action or a penalty or something, or a fine or jail, then that's extortion. Now, we used to have a system here in the United States, and they used to call it the insurance racket in New York City. I don't know if they have it in other places, but in New York City, they have an organization called the Mafia. It's called organized crime. And it's called a protection racket. And so this guy, Luigi, comes into your store, and he says, do you have insurance? And the guy says, oh, yeah, I got insurance with Mutual of Omaha. No, no. I says, have you got insurance to protect your store from being burned? The guy says, yeah, I've got fire insurance with Mutual of Omaha. I says, no, you don't understand. I mean being burned like next week. Hey, what do you mean? It means that from now on I'm going to come in every Wednesday and you're going to have a $100 bill for me, $100 a week, to prevent your store from getting burned or firebombed or something like that. And so, you know, you might be incensed and say, wait a minute, Luigi, you can't do that. This is a shakedown. And Luigi says, hey, listen, call it what you want. But down the street, in the cleaning store, did you notice that it burned last week? He didn't have any insurance. And the Mutual of Omaha cannot prevent your store from burning. They can only pay you after the fact. I can prevent your store from burning. You pay me $100 every Wednesday, your store doesn't burn. You don't pay me $100 every Wednesday, your store is going to burn. There's just no two ways about it. Now, that's just out-and-out extortion, isn't it? All right. Now, the state of New York, the state of California, see, they're now in the protection racket. They have moved Luigi out, and they have moved the insurance commissioner in. So they get a little different system here in the United States. See, we now come along, and we say, well, now, if you want to buy insurance, that's fine. And so then they come on to the auto insurance, and they say, well, now, in the interest of the health, safety, and welfare of the public at large, everybody has to buy it. So what they do is the insurance industry goes down to the legislature and they say, hey, listen, what we need is a law. See how sophisticated this is? We need a law. And so now they use the police power of the state. You know, the uniformed policeman comes in with his billy club. Say, but he doesn't tell you, pay me the $100. No, no. And you can buy this insurance from any company you want. Because, see, all the insurance companies are in on the shakedown racket. And that's because the insurance companies organize themselves into a lobbying group, like the National Association for Insurance Underwriters, you know, some fancy title like that. And then they hire somebody, a lobbyist, they call him. And then he goes into the legislature and he says, hey, listen, Bob, you want to get elected next time, and the National Association of Insurance Underwriters would like to contribute to your campaign, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. And Bob, you know, he wants to run for re-election, and so he takes the money. And then, of course, the lobbyist says, now, we have pending legislation, you know, and or we're going to propose legislation, or we have a bill that we want you to sponsor. See how simple that is? Now, in the Bible, that's called bribery. See, but in America, we call that campaign contributions. As long as you're making campaign contributions, that's legal. See? So here in America, we're very sophisticated. We just take out-and-out criminal enterprises and legalize them. That's all. We just put a name or a new label on it. Now, we bump Luigi out. He's crude. He just comes in, you know, and demands money, and he's going to burn your store down if you don't deliver. See, now, the insurance industry, they're not going to burn your store down. No, if you don't have auto insurance, well, they're not going to come out here and take your house or your job or fine you or something like that. Now, when the policeman stops you, he'll impound your car and just take it, and now your car is sitting over here in an impound yard, and it's costing you $5 a day. And if it's in there for 30 days, it costs you $150 to bail it out. Then they give you a ticket, and then you come in before the judge, and then the judge fines you $150. So you like that? So it costs you $150 to get your car out of hock, and costs you another $150 to pay the fine. And they charge you court costs on top of that. That's another $50. That's the judge's retirement fund. Isn't that a neat system? Now, up in Massachusetts, they came up with a new line. See, you got to have health insurance. Well, come on. If the state can compel you to have auto insurance, can't they compel you to have health insurance? Can't they compel you to have homeowner's insurance and fire insurance and insurance and Luigi insurance, sure. And they can use the police power of the state to do it. It's a shakedown racket, but it's much more sophisticated. For instance, we have in this country called a thing called lotteries, and they're very noble and high-minded, and they finance primarily, you know, wonderful public works projects, things like public school. Here in Missouri, for instance, before they had the lottery here, the neighboring states had lotteries, and so Missourians would go across the border into Illinois, and you know, if you lived in St. Louis, for instance, you'd go across the border into Illinois and buy lottery tickets. And so our legislature said, gee, we're losing all this money, so we need a lottery like everybody else. And so we don't want to lose our money in Missouri to Illinois and Kansas and Iowa. So we need a lottery. And so they adopted the lottery program. In order to get it passed, this is the Bible Belt, you know, to get it passed, they said, well, we're going to use the money, the profits that come from the lottery, and then we're going to fund our public schools. Well, you know, if you're a property tax owner and you say, well, gee, we could shift the burden of taxation onto the gamblers. See, all of the school tax, we can shift that off to the gamblers and let them pay for it. And so they voted it in. All right, so now we got the lottery, just like all the other states. Now, the lottery here used to be called the numbers racket. You know, before the states got involved in gambling, it was Luigi that was walking down the street taking bets, taking orders, you know, so that you could win the lottery, the numbers racket, the numbers. And so you paid your dollar, and you give them your numbers, and so they come back, and so here you go, see? And it was an underground, it was an illegal operation, and the state was just mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore. And a judge back in 1905, he wrote a long treatise on the numbers racket, and he described how wicked and evil it was, and how men were taking their money that they needed to buy milk for their little children and spending it on lottery tickets. And he said it was pernicious and that it was wicked and evil and that it was just awful. And, all right, now, and then when you got through reading his opinion, it was in a case back in 1905 in New York City, by the way, you'd say, well, God, this numbers racket's really wicked and it needs to be stamped out. And so the state was busily stamping it out everywhere until they adopted it themselves. And so one day, New York State says, well, look, the mafia is making tons of money and the people out there, they want to buy these lottery tickets. The people love it. So why don't we get into the lottery business? And they did. And it just produced tons of money for the state so that they could spend it on schools and fire departments and city services and one thing and another. Now, let me ask you this. If the numbers racket is wicked and evil and pernicious and it breaks up families and causes poverty and does all these wicked, evil things when the mafia is operating it, why is it that when the state operates the lottery that it's righteous and good and does all these wonderful things? Huh? Can you send me a letter and explain that to me, would you? Explain it to me. Now, the truth of the matter is the lottery is a wicked, evil, pernicious practice. And what we've done is we've changed it from private enterprise, that's Luigi, just working, for the mafia, to a state enterprise. And so now the lottery is a government-controlled criminal activity. Well, insurance is exactly the same thing. See, it started out as the protection racket. And now it has morphed into a protection racket run by the state instead of a protection racket run by private enterprise, say the mafia. And the players in the game are much more sophisticated. See, they're the moguls from the Ivy League business schools. The guys like George Bush, who goes to Yale and joins Skull and Bones and becomes president of the United States. That way, when the insurance industry comes into the hallowed halls of Congress with all of their bribery money called campaign contributions, they can get enacted any law they want. Like, you have to buy insurance or we're going to take your car or put you in jail. See, Luigi never had that. The mafia never had the gun barrel of the police state to enforce their edicts. They never had the power to create laws. And so their operation was limited to the businesses that they could physically go intimidate. Now they can physically intimidate everybody. See, the state can intimidate everybody because nearly everybody has a car or drives, and now everybody has to buy this insurance. And so now Massachusetts took a look at it and said, look, health insurance is as big as or bigger than auto insurance, and what we need is a national health care. So they tried it back in 1994. Remember, Hillary and Bill Clinton tried it, and they couldn't get it through. And then Barack Obama comes on the scene. He promised it, and you people out there want it. The people of America want health care insurance in the same way that they want to buy lottery tickets. It's pernicious, it's wicked, it's evil, it's bad for them, but they want it. Smoking, is an example of it. It's self-destructive behavior. But hey, we want our cigarettes. Alcohol, in many cases, is self-destructive. By God, we want our booze, and we're going to have it. Now, anytime you get one of these behaviors, alcohol, the government wants to get into the alcohol business. They don't want to make the whiskey and market the whiskey. They just want to come in and tax it. So they come along and they say, well, look at the problems that alcohol causes. Alcohol causes alcoholism, and it breaks up families, and it causes poverty, and does all these bad, wicked, terrible, awful things. So then the state comes in, and they pass laws, and then they tax it. Same thing with tobacco. They see that you people want to smoke, and so they come in and they regulate it, control it, and tax it. They don't do anything to produce it, to grow it, to manufacture it, to sell it. They just come in and take their cut. It's the ultimate criminal activity where you have no input and you produce nothing, consume much, and get paid for it. Isn't that wonderful? All right. So now, if you can't sell it to people, then what you do is you enforce it upon them. You compel them to buy it whether they want it or not. Now, that's called fascism. And this government-industry partnership, this fascist model, is what Mussolini and Hitler had in mind. That was their model. We'll get big business and we'll get big government teamed up together and we'll just make the laws to go out and rape, rob, and pillage the people. And that's what they've done. Now, in the background of all of this, there is a God in heaven, and he says, don't practice that. And so the average guy says, well, I have to because it's the law. And his preacher gets up in the pulpit and tells him that this is righteous and holy, just, and good, and cites Romans 13. See? And Romans 13 does have some merit. I'm not suggesting that it doesn't. But Acts 5, verse 29 is the controlling statute, along with Romans 13, 1 through 6, that tells you when your government or somebody else comes to you and says, let's violate the law of God, then your duty is to tell them, hell no, I won't go. We ought to obey God rather than men. But when you're faced with the lion's den or the fiery furnace, and you know, you have some inconvenience or some comfort issues over there, you will almost always side with the state. You will almost always go against God. And you will follow the state's mandate because, you know, it's in your self-interest, short-term self-interest. All right. Now, the reason that we buy insurance comes from a couple of sources. Number one, the state requires you to buy it. You don't want it. And if it was your choice and if it was a free market decision, you wouldn't buy it. But because it's the law, you buy it. That's coercion. And you're being cunningly coerced into waiving your rights due to your ignorance. That's a famous line comes out of a court case somewhere. Cunningly coerced into waiving your rights due to ignorance. Now, that's number one. Or there could be a second factor in there. You personally want it because you really believe in it. And I told you about this lady that's making $48,000 a year. And that's gross, $48,000 gross. And she's spending $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year, to buy health insurance. Now, that's loyalty. That's belief. That's, my God, now that woman really has a strong belief in health insurance. And if it isn't impoverishing her, which she complained about on the Lair News Hour, it sure as hell ought to. That takes 25% of her gross pay. So she's paying $12,000. She's out of her net pay, it's much higher than that. Because, see, just your income tax and Social Security takes a third. So Social Security and income tax are taking $16,000 from her every year. Then, in addition to that, she's paying $12,000 for insurance. Doesn't she have a mortgage payment to pay and a car payment and food to buy and clothes and, you know, other expenses? All right. Now, that woman is paying a penalty. She's involved in a program and a process over here that's impoverishing her. She's out here just working her heart out for other people. Not for her, but for other people. Because of this fear that she's going to get cancer, you know, like breast cancer or something. Now, I've got a wife, and she's an old lady now, and she doesn't have breast cancer, at least not today, but she gets it every once in a while. And she has over the past 30 years. So I'll pass this on to you. Breast cancer, that's when you get this lump in your breast. And my wife gets a lump in her breast. It's always in her right breast. And years ago, she had a shoulder strap across her chest, and she was involved in an auto accident. And that shoulder strap really smashed her right breast. And from that point on, she gets these hard lumps in there. Now, here's what she does. Instead of having it cut off, which is what normal women in America do, you get a lump in your breast, you go ahead and have your breast removed. Well, I don't deny it. That'll cure lumpy breast, cut it off. But that breast, you know, is a pretty important part of your anatomy. I notice that most doctors recommending mastectomy don't recommend castration. I mean, when it comes down to where push comes to shove, ladies, we don't mind cutting your breasts off, but we're real concerned about cutting off our testicles now. I took that one away in your heart and asked, well, what's that all about? So my wife takes barley green, and that's because this lump in your breast is an imbalance in your body's metabolism. In fact, that's what disease is. Disease means I'm ill at ease, I'm uncomfortable. And so you get diseased. And when you get diseased, you feel bad. Well, oftentimes it's accompanied by pain. And my wife reports to me, she says when she gets a lump in her right breast, always the right breast, and it hurts. And so I felt it, and by God, it's hard. I mean, it's, you know, it's not as hard as a rock, you know, but it's hard. You can feel it. It's really, you know, hard. But when she takes barley green, it's a god-awful nasty taste and stuff. I tried some. I thought maybe, you know, it tastes like Jack Daniels and Coca-Cola. Not, it's nothing like that at all. It's green, so it looks bad. I mean, just looking at the stuff in the glass is enough to gag a maggot. But, you know, there it is. And she just drinks it right down. Tells me, she reports that it doesn't taste good, but it's tolerable. I tried it, and I'm telling you that it's when you drink it, it's a race to the toilet to see whether you can puke on the hall floor or you can puke in the toilet. But that's God for you. I've often said, you know, if God had made Brussels sprouts taste like Godiva chocolate, he would have no problem in getting little kids to eat Brussels sprouts. In order for me to get Brussels sprouts down, I have to put balsamic vinegar on. I mean, I bury that stuff under that balsamic vinegar. I mean, I can kill the taste with that vinegar. I can choke them down. All right, now here's what that barley green does for you, ladies. It restores the acid-alkaline balance in your body. And the lump will go away in about 24 hours. Yeah, sometimes it takes 2 days, you know, 48 hours. But I've been married to this woman for pushing on to 30 years now, and I've probably seen this hard, lumpy breast come up 50, maybe 100 times in 25 years. I don't know. It's pretty often. I mean, it isn't every month. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. Maybe it's more like Oh, three, four times a year. Yeah, that's probably more like it. I mean, three or four times a year, 25 years. Yeah, that would be 50 or 100 times. Yeah, it's not too far off. And every single time, well, so far. I mean, there may come a day, you know, when she gets a hard lump in her breast and she drinks her barley green and it gets harder and lumpier and she dies from it. And I imagine that's probably going to happen someday. But over the past 25 years, it hasn't happened. And I was amazed. First time she tried that barley green trick, you know, for her breast. Now, you're going to sit there and say, well, that's not really cancer. Well, you know, if it isn't really cancer, you tell me what it is. Send me an email and, you know, clue me in. When she was actively going to the medical doctor, she went to the Zion Clinic up in Illinois when she had cancer. And, you know, they took samples and they had them biopsied and they came back and they said, hey, lady, you got about 6 months to live. Actually, it wasn't six, it was three. And so she went through the program up there and she learned how to deal with cancer, and that breast cancer thing with her comes up, you know, two, three, four, five times a year. I can't tell you exactly. I don't keep track of it. And she uses barley green. Now, this barley green is relatively inexpensive, you know, compared to mastectomy. I mean, it's, you know, fairly cheap. I think we pay $10, $12, $15 and you get about, I don't know, it's a jar that probably has 12 ounces in it, maybe 16 ounces. It looks like about like a pint jar. And you put, I think she puts in about two, maybe three teaspoons in a glass of water. I told you, it looks god-awful. I tasted it, and I didn't care for it. But she drinks it down, and in 24 hours, it just solves the problem. Now, if you want to spend your money on a mastectomy, now you're talking about big bucks. And then you're talking about the loss of a valuable body part. Now, it is true. You can live without a breast. You can live without testicles. You can probably live without your ears and probably live without your eyes. I mean, if you stop to think about it, how many body parts could you cut off and still survive? It's kind of like an automobile. I mean, you could take your car and take the headlights out, and it probably wouldn't affect its operation. Your nighttime operation would be impaired somewhat. You could take off the brake lights and the tail lights, and you could take off the windshield wipers, and you could take off the back doors and the trunk lid and the hood. And I mean, you know, just start thinking of all the parts, hubcaps, and all the parts that you could take off your car, and it would still run, wouldn't it? Still take you down to the store. But you know, every time you take off one of those parts, it impairs the overall operation of the vehicle to some degree. You know, taking the headlights out, well, okay, as long as you're operating in daylight hours, it's no big deal. But you know, the first time that you need to go someplace at 11 o'clock at night, all of a sudden, it's a big deal. So you got so many body parts, you know, when you were created, and I would like to die with all of my body parts. I would like to die with all of my teeth, both ears, both eyes, you know, all my toes, all my fingers, both hands. All right. Now you might be sitting there saying, hey, you're kind of straying away from insurance. No, not at all. Just talking about cause and effect here. Because, you see, the reason that you need this health insurance is because you're just terrified of cancer, and you don't know how to deal with cancer. And you know cancer is expensive, and it costs $100,000. And so to pay for that, you need to pay $1,000 a month in premium. See? That's your shakedown. That's your payoff to Luigi over here, except now you're paying it to Mutual of Omaha or Blue Cross or Blue Shield or something like that. So. Now, these guys are sophisticated, and they go to the Ivy League business schools, and they operate big multinational corporations, but they're criminals, nothing more, nothing less. And they're taking advantage of you. They're taking advantage of your fear. Now, along comes, of all people, this God, this creator, this oddball God that I keep telling you about over here that you haven't heard of. And he says, hey, listen, this insurance over here is a crime. It's limited liability, and I don't like it. And I want you to practice strict liability. And if you'll do that, I will take all sickness and disease away from you. Isn't that just special? That's a contract term. See, God has a contract, just like your insurance policy is a contract. Well, Moses negotiated a contract with God, the intermediary. Today we call him a lawyer, but you know, in the olden days he was called an intermediary between God and the people of Israel. And most of you people out there in the United States and Canada, all you white Anglo-Saxons out there, are descendants of these Israelites, and you have a contract in full force and effect. Maybe you didn't know that, but you do. And this contract over here guarantees you 25,550 days, 70 years, 3 score and 10 years, of trouble-free, disease-free life. I don't know if your preacher has explained that to you. If he didn't, well, then he's remiss. And there's another little hidden benefit. If you violate the terms and conditions of the contract, and if you get cancer, you can come to this very same God, and you can repent. I mean, you can stop eating bacon fat, and he says he'll heal you, and then you can go on from there and you know, forgive and forget. Now, most people, they don't know how to do that. They don't know what the terms and conditions of the contract are. They can't find the contract to start with. They're religious people. They go to church. But their preacher doesn't tell them anything about the contract. He tells them to go buy insurance because the church buys insurance and the preacher buys insurance. And the state requires that you buy insurance. And Luigi is going to be really disappointed if you don't buy insurance. But there's another way. There's a better way. There's the Ten Commandment model, and then there's the Communist Manifesto model, and that's what you're practicing here. You're practicing this Babylonian mystery religion, and it impoverishes you. And if it's not impoverishing you, it debilitates your standard of living. It takes something from it. You know, if you're paying $6,000 a year in insurance premium, well, just figure out, well, what could I do with that $6,000 bucks if I didn't have to spend it on insurance? You know, what could I do with $12,000 a year if I didn't have to spend it on health insurance? So you take $6,000 that you're spending for all of your insurance. This is assuming now that you're making $100,000 a year. You're spending 6% on insurance, and then you're spending an additional 12%. It's $1,000 a month. How do you like that? $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year, 12% of a $100,000 income on health insurance. That's 18% total. Hey, you're starting to get up to spending some big bucks here. Hey, I'm a little over my halfway mark here. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by pre-arrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. You can also just send us an email to our webpage, our website, georgegordon.org. Just tell us you want one of those. Make sure when you send us an email, though, that you send us your snail mail address so that we can send one to you. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. In the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. We need to keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine alone, they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about insurance, and I'm not talking about, you know, no-fault insurance versus tort insurance. I'm talking about no insurance at all, not zero zilch, which is also known as strict liability. Strict liability, that's what I practice, strict liability. That makes me strictly responsible for all of my losses. Now, I've got two houses. I'll give you a little illustration here. And sometimes people will say to me, my wife bought an old distressed house down on what we call Barn Fork. It's a house in 3 acres. And she said, our house is up here on top of the ridge, and a tornado may come through here and wipe our house out, but it's not likely that it will take the house at Barn Fork, which is down in the holler, and then take our house up on top of the ridge. So I'd like to have a spare house. And I thought, well, I don't know. Do I really need a spare house? Well, for those of us that practice strict liability, the answer is yeah, we need two houses. Now, see, for all you normal people out there, you don't, because, see, you've got your government. And your government now, they come along and they say, well, if you have a disaster like Hurricane Katrina, we'll send FEMA. And so I watched all you people down there on the Gulf Coast after that Hurricane Katrina, and I said, well, thank God for government, huh? And thank God for all these insurance companies that are going to come in here and make all these people whole and rebuild their houses. And remember President Bush, he went down to New Orleans and he said, whatever it costs, you know, whatever it takes, we're going to do. Remember that? Well, that's not the only lie that President Bush ever told us, was it? Because you people down there on the Gulf Coast, you know, you found out your insurance companies don't pay off, and the government doesn't come in and do anything for you either. Well, that's not to say that the government doesn't come in there and do something for somebody. I mean, I'm sure that there's 10 or 15 people down there that are just singing the praises of FEMA to the high heavens. But then, you know, anybody that wins the lottery is going to praise the lottery to the heights of heaven. Let's be intelligent, you know. Hell, if I won $84 million on the lottery, God, I'd be sitting here just spouting off about how wonderful the lottery is and how beneficial and what a great program it is and why you ought to buy 15 lottery tickets for the next game. But the truth of the matter is, for the broad majority of people out there, buying lottery tickets is about as useless as urinating into the wind. All that's going to do is get you wet. If you want to try it, get out there and do it. But, you know, most of us guys, we urinate downwind, in case you ladies didn't know that. Yeah, let me tell you. So if you want to do it in the wind, you know, get after it. But I tested that. All I got was wet. And the same thing I figured for this FEMA thing. See, I've been watching the insurance companies. And from my experience, I can tell you that's exactly what I would expect. See, I wouldn't buy hurricane insurance. And what I do is take the premiums for the hurricane insurance and buy a second house. And one a little bit further back from the beach. You know what I mean? In other words, instead of buying two beachfront properties at Biloxi, Mississippi, I think I'd buy one on the beach and then one back up off the shore, you know, something up in the air about 200-300 feet. Because that's what my wife told me. She said, I want one house down in the holler where the tornadoes don't go, and then I want my house up here on top of the ridge where I can see the neighbors. So we live on the house or in the house up here on the ridge, but it leaves us vulnerable to tornadoes. Now, there's a principle in the Bible that says time and chance happens to us all. You'll find that in Ecclesiastes. Time and chance. Now, time and chance does not happen to the man that obeys God and keeps his commandments. But, you know, you might slip up, and then you never can tell. God might get ticked off at you like he did Job one time. See, Job, in the final analysis, he didn't break any laws. In fact, Job said, I didn't break any laws. He told his three buddies, he said, I didn't break the law. But he was suffering the penalty anyway. In fact, a tornado came down there and ripped up his children's house and killed them all. And we think they were out having a big birthday party over there. So that just tells you something about birthdays. But anyway, Job lost everything. But then when it was all said and done, God had to make restitution to him because he had destroyed all of his wealth prematurely and without just cause. And as a result of that, he restored all of his goods double, which is exactly what the law requires. So when God destroys your house, he owes you two. Well, assuming that you're practicing the law and you don't deserve the punishment. Now, in my case over here, that's not going to be very likely, that I'm going to be destroyed because I'm innocent. I'm not another Job. I'm guilty as hell. I'm just getting my just desserts. So when God sends a tornado by and he wipes out my house up here, you know, I'm getting things to complain about. You know, I'm like you guys down there on the Gulf Coast. I'm just getting what's due me. And then I'm in hopes that I'll have this second house down here in the holler and I'll have a place to move into. You know, keep me out of the rain. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, I have both houses. Now the tornado hasn't come yet. Now I've got both houses. Now, for you people buying insurance, you've got your one house on the Gulf Coast, and you're paying your premiums over here to Luigi, you know, up in Jackson, Mississippi. Luigi, that's your state government. Well, you're actually paying it, you know, to the insurance industry, but the insurance industry is paying off campaign contributions to your lawmakers. You know, let's be intelligent people. Let's understand how this game is being played. And so you don't have two houses. You got one house and a promise that if your house gets blown down, that somebody's going to come out here and make you whole. So, now, the reality of it is that the insurance industry is not in the business of rebuilding torn-down houses or flooded houses or destroyed houses. That's not their business. And if you thought that the business of the insurance industry was to make people whole, you do err not understanding the law. The insurance industry is in the business of making profit. It's a business, and that's the business of business, is making money, making a profit. And so they very craftily write up these insurance policies, as I pointed out to you a little earlier. The guy that writes up the insurance policy is an attorney, a lawyer, a good one too. Not one of the 90% of the jerks. Now, it's one of the 10% of the top flight attorneys in the country. He writes up this contract. And they write the contract up so that it appears that it's doing you a favor, when in reality it is written by the insurance company for the insurance company. Can you understand that? See, when you buy an insurance contract, you don't have any input into the terms and conditions of the agreement. None. It's called an adhesion contract. It's a take-it-or-leave-it contract. And you just take it. And, of course, you know, if you're short of money and you don't want to buy this hurricane insurance, you don't have to. Now, right away, somebody's going to say, well, when the hurricane comes, it's going to affect your house just like mine. That's not true. No, sir, Rebob, taint so. And you see this especially with tornadoes. I was in Waco, Texas years ago, about 1980. We had a sale down there in Waco, Texas after that big tornado came through. And there was a house down there. And then it was owned by a guy named Baker. And I'd never seen a tornado before. I'd never seen anything like this in my life, you know, being an old California guy, you know. I drove my truck out there to Waco, Texas, and we were driving. And there was just a waste area. I mean, just concrete slabs everywhere. We'd rented a house out in the neighborhoods, you know, the crew did. And there were neighborhoods out there where there'd be, you know, like maybe four, five, six houses on a block. And two or three houses are gone, and two or three houses are still there. And then some houses were badly damaged, and some houses weren't damaged at all. Well, the baker's house, they had a sign out in the front yard, and it says, "Who says the bakers don't throw wild parties?" I thought that was pretty good. Who says the bakers don't throw wild parties? Now, we happened to rent a house, and then all that happened to the house was the back porch was taken off. That's the only damage to the house. Next door on both sides of houses were gone, just taken away. And people marvel at the serendipity, if that's the right word to use, just the caprice, just the wild chance, the throw of the dice that occurs in a tornado. Same thing happens with hurricanes. And you can have a hurricane come through there and just wipe out houses right and left, and every once in a while you'll find a house that ain't even touched. It's just standing there. How in the hell did that happen? I had a student down in Biloxi, Mississippi, and he was up off the beach, back up, you know, quite a ways, when Hurricane Camille came through in 69. And all around him was damage everywhere. And he said not one shingle was blown off their house. Not a shingle. Isn't that amazing? Everybody around him is suffering damage. They never even lost a shingle off their house. All right. Now, he went through Hurricane Camille. Now, a lot of people went through Hurricane Camille, and they came out on the other side of it pretty well. And they said so. And then they stayed for Hurricane Katrina and got wiped out. Now, here's why you got wiped out down on the Gulf Coast. See, you got Mardi Gras. Sabbath breaking. I covered this, remember, last week or the week before. We were talking about this thing of the law. See? And Sabbath breaking is a capital felony. And you people down there in Mississippi and Louisiana, you're all Sabbath breakers. And then you all practice usury and interest. And I showed you in Ezekiel 18 that the practice of usury and interest is a capital felony. You know what I mean? Now, we're out here violating these laws. We practice witchcraft in the form of birthdays and pass our seed through the fire to Moloch. Just normal everyday things. I mean, your kid's born in the hospital and he gets a birth certificate. That's called passing your seed through the fire. It's against the law. It's a capital felony. Or, you know, it ain't quite the same form of abortion, you know, but passing your seed through the fire and abortion are the same penalty. It's death. And then we wonder why it is that we're getting these curses, that we're getting these hurricanes and droughts and economic catastrophe. You know, we deserve it. We're just getting our just desserts. And so I thought I'd come along and say, wait a minute, let's take a look at this insurance thing. Insurance is a curse. You think it's a blessing, it's a curse. And then not only is it a curse, but it impoverishes you, and then when the disaster occurs, the bastards won't pay you. How do you like that? And down there on the Gulf Coast, I got this clause in the insurance contract that says we don't pay for water damage and floods. We only pay for hurricane damage. That's wind damage. And if you want flood damage, you got to pay extra for that. All right. Well, now, the insurance salesman didn't explain that to you. You didn't read the contract. I mean, if you'd read the contract, you'd have probably known. Yeah, in fact, for you lay people out there, I mean, if you've been to high school, you probably could read an insurance contract and understand it. You can't read it because you can't see it. You have to have a 10-power loop. But, you know, assuming you can get a magnifying glass so you can read the fine print, if you could read that fine print, you could probably understand it. Now, a credit card application, the toughest contract that I have ever seen in my life is a credit card application. And I'm not the best lawyer in the world, but I'm, you know, fair to middle. By God, I have a hard time understanding those. I gotta sit down with a Bouvier's Law Dictionary and translate those words that are oftentimes used in phrases in a credit card contract, and then rewrite it with the new definitions from the dictionary in order to understand it. I mean, those are really, really tough. I can understand those, but they're now insurance contractors, your tracks are pretty straightforward. They write them in fine print so that'll discourage you from reading it, so you don't read it and you believe the representations of the insurance agent. Who believes the representations of his training counselor? He was trained in what to say and how to say it to sell the policy. He never read one either. My dad was unusual. He actually read the policies. He knew those policies better than the claims reps. And he'd go to bat for the policyholders. My dad was a hell of a consumer advocate for his policyholders. And that's because my dad was an honest man, you know, fair to middle honest, you know, not 100% biblically or scripturally honest, but, you know, fair to middle honest. He had a few morals. Today, these insurance people don't have any morals at all. They're just totally amoral. They don't mind stealing from you because it's just business. No fuss from us. It's just, you know, it's the way we make our living. I had a lawyer tell me one time, an old buddy of mine, he said, if I had my career to do over again, I would not become a lawyer. He said, it's a dirty business. But he said, at age 55, you know, this is my meal ticket, and it's the only thing I know. It's the only thing I know. It's a dirty business, but it's the only thing I know. Well, okay. There's probably a lot of people in that boat, so I just thought I'd come along and tell you, hey, there's another way out here. Besides insurance, there's a thing called limited liability. And that's insurance. And then there's another thing called strict liability. Okay, that's called individual responsibility, and that's what comes from the scripture. That's what God told us to practice. And if you practice that, then you come under the terms and conditions of the contract, and time and chance doesn't happen to you, the terms and conditions of the contract apply. So I've got two houses. I'm not expecting my house to blow away, but if it does, I'll just be getting my just desserts. I broke the law too, so I'm not, you know, claiming to be righteous Rosie over here. I'm just telling you that when I get mine, I'm getting it because I deserved it. So I'm just here to tell you, well, when you get yours, it's not because you're innocent, it's because you deserve it. Now your preacher's telling you, all these poor innocent people, they weren't innocent, that's why they got punished. And Hurricane Katrina was a punishment. Okay, cancer is your punishment. Got that? And you're sitting there saying, well, how come your wife is getting cancer? Well, it's because long, long ago and far, far away, she broke a lot of laws, and now she's getting her just desserts. That's the bottom line. I know that isn't kind and gentle, but that's the truth, and that's the way it is. All right, now, you got to live with it. Now, once you get cancer, you're going to have cancer for the rest of your life. If there's any way for you to avoid getting cancer, you want to do it. You want to avoid cancer like AIDS, herpes, and VD. But, you know, once you get it, okay, it doesn't mean it's the end of the line. It just means that you're going to have it and you're going to suffer with it for the rest of your life. King David went out and he tore off a piece on Friday night with Bathsheba. Remember that? Remember that story? And then God said, now I'm going to punish you, sucker, and for the rest of your life. You're not going to know whether you're going to live or die, and there's always going to be somebody trying to take your crown off your head. So David, for the rest of his life, lived under that threat, lived under that punishment. He was punished for that crime. He didn't get away with that. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. It's true, he didn't die for it. He wasn't killed for that adultery, but he didn't get away with it either. So tuck that one away in your heart, that when you're paying your insurance premium, next time you write out the check to the insurance company, that's your penalty. You're being punished. Now, if you'd like to get out from under it, that's what this is all about. Hey, I'm out of time again. I've got to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.